Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Thursday show. I'm Gary Gramling. He is Connor Orr. I guess we don't really have a name for the show quite yet. It's so fitting. It comes out on Thursday. You have to, if you listen to it on Friday, though, the vibe's going to be all off. And it really has a Thursday feel to it. Thursday was like must-see TV when I was a kid. That was like the Seinfeld, Friends, Cheers. Might have been must. No, Cheers is probably done at that point. But like Seinfeld and Friends, I didn't like Friends, but I like Seinfeld.
To illustrate it's not a huge age gap, but right then the Thursday night lineup for me then was Step by Step, Family Matters, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, which was great.
Yeah.
Loved Hanging with Mr. Cooper, and briefly the show that lasted like four episodes called Teen Angel that I thought was hysterical. And they pulled it off the air.
That doesn't ring a bell at all.
He like, I mean, like it's sort of like dark to think about it now, but like he died in high school, but he's still hanging out with all his friends.
We're gonna start every show with inappropriate laughter.
Thursday show vibe. It was 100% a comedy. I'm not making this up. It was Teen Angel. It lasted like five episodes.
Oh, I love it. I gotta stream that. All right,
Disney Plus.
The most violent show on Disney Plus. They'll do the prequel. Oh boy, yeah. We're gonna talk football on this show. Every week, we're going to have one of the Sports Illustrated writers is going to be joining me. We're going to talk about sort of what our big story was in the week. And this week, it's Connor Orr and his, we in the business call it a reported essay on officiating. It was for the innovation issue of Sports Illustrated and just sort of looking at how the NFL has really tried to innovate with officiating, specifically the pass interference review rule, the Sean Payton rule, but it is not going well at all. So I guess my first question, Connor, our first topic here is like we see the bad calls anecdotally. You know, it's almost like that was the problem with instituting the rule in the first place. It was based on a single brutally missed call, but I don't know if it was a systemic problem with missed pass interference, you know, as compared to anything else. But now that it's being reviewed, and as we saw in like the DeAndre Hopkins play, it really not being reviewed and corrected very often. Do we have a major issue here, or is this just kind of like one of those things where, you know, there's 1,000 plays a week and we zero in on one that probably didn't have an effect on the game anyway?
I think we have an issue in that it's contributing to a bad environment for everybody now, right? So the officials are out there with sort of nebulous instructions on what to do when this happens, and then that impacts all of their relationships that they need to basically control a game. So the coaches are angry at them, the players are angry at them, the fans are angry at them, and you know that's not unusual for officials, but it's unusual now because John Perry, the Monday Night Football rules analyst and the 18-year official, said, you know, to me, they're getting them wrong now twice or maybe three times in a single blow, and so that's really what's happening here. I mean, you know, you have inexperienced officials. And that's already an issue. And then you throw this into the mix, and yeah, it's bad. And I would not be surprised at all if this completely goes away after this year.
I think it's probably got to, right?
It has to.
This was too much.
It has to, unless, you know, the common sense thing, and it was something that I wish I could have gotten a little more into in the pieces. I mean, Sky Judge is where everything should go. You know, the pushback that you're going to get from the, you know, for those of you who don't know what Sky Judge is, Sky Judge is an extra official in the booth that's basically watching the game like we are, but they have instantaneous access to all the cameras and they can correct stuff in real time. So if they see something on the field, like they're wired to the head referee and they're like pass interference on 21, they can see that, you know, they have a better view than the officials have, but, you know, the pushback that you're going to hear from ownership or coaches or anything like that is either it takes the human element out of the game, or there's not enough experienced officials to work on the field. So what makes you think we're going to find enough people to also sit in 16 more people, I guess, to sit in press boxes every Sunday?
I feel like I could do it.
Yeah. So that's you're exactly right. You can. And the Alliance of American Football did. I mean, they found they found people to just do it. I mean, you know, and it was fine. And I don't understand why this is such a stopping point, because I think that that was the best part of the ill-fated Alliance of American Football, was they had a live camera on their Sky Judge, and the transparency was 100%. You knew what the guy was thinking, or woman. They had a couple of female Sky Judges too, and you know, you knew what they were thinking, and you could follow the process, and you didn't need Mike Pereira to come in, you know, and give a 5-minute breakdown of the intent of the violence of someone's arm movement as they're tracking a receiver. That, you know, it's very cut and dry, which I think is, I wish where things were going, but I think we're going to end up going backwards now. We're going to go back to the dark ages again and just not review anything.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. There are two things that really drive me nuts, as you probably already saw in the outline that I sent you. But the first is the fact that there is already a built-in break between every play in the NFL. Like, it is already made for replay review. That's why they can show like 3 replays of a certain play between every between every play. And it's just, more than any other sport, it is just built. The tempo is built for this Sky Judge system.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, you know, if you look at the way that the timing of stuff is broken down, the actual action time as compared to the runtime of a game, it's totally insane. I mean, there's enough time for someone, and you know, maybe you have a pilot program for a year where these people don't do anything except practice being Sky Judges for a year, and I think by the end of your first season you should be able to do this instantaneously. I mean, the challenge for breaking in new officials is how to handle yourself on the field when you're at eye level and you're seeing stuff flying around, but when you're in the press box with an HDTV. I like HGTV.
Or HGTV. Maybe, maybe watch a little Property Brothers.
HDTV. And, you know, you're seeing all this in crystal clear 4K, slow motion. You get to control all this, and you're hardwired to the main referee. That's going to become second nature to someone, I think, way quicker than someone on the field. And if you're worried about it, pull off like your middle tier guy, right? Because, you know, if you have a 10-year official that's just sort of like maybe the guy that's not doing the Super Bowl, the guy that's not doing a lot of your big marquee playoff games, he would be perfect to go in as a Sky Judge, you know?
Like Mike Pereira.
Exactly.
I mean, Mike Carey is one of the best referees of all time, and he ended up being the worst, like, broadcast official out there.
Yeah, and also spare me a little bit, because I love Dean Blandino. I think he was probably the best rules officiating expert or head of referees that the league had since it became a visible position. I thought he was very good at least confronting stuff and understanding what was going on. He was a stand-up comedian.
Yes. Yeah,
like 3 years before that. So yeah. Like, spare me the idea that where are we going to find these guys? I don't know. Carolines, you know? go find more stand-up comedians. They'll do it. Everyone needs a paycheck.
Bobby Moynihan, what's he up to? Get him out there.
Yeah, seriously.
I hate to, yeah, I just hate that they have to have this, like, and the other thing, obviously, the argument is you're going to put too many delays in the game, which, one, as I mentioned, you have the built-in breaks, but also the theater of replay with the Microsoft Surface little, I don't think you can buy, like, a Microsoft Surface, like, mini TV anywhere, so I don't know why they have that product placement in this, but have the Sky Judge and just have him wear a, if you really want to, just have him wear a Microsoft hat. Like, I'd make that trade-off. And the other thing, as I mentioned, you have the breaks built in, but I can't stand the theater of replay. They have to get their Microsoft Surface little product placement out there, and I don't think you can buy one of those mini TVs that they actually have on the field. So I'm not sure how effective the product placement is, but. Just have the Sky Judge wear a Microsoft hat, or just put the same, you know, they make all those, I know this because Microsoft Surface used to advertise with the MMQB, they give you those little like panels to put on the back of your tablet so that when you stand it up, everyone sees you're working on a Microsoft Surface. Just give that to the Sky Judge.
Do you want to hear a great, very quick Microsoft Surface story?
I always do, yeah.
Do you know like those commercials that they have where it's like, I'm a hairdresser and yeah. I'm very busy and I need a Microsoft Surface to make sure I know whose hair I'm cutting, you know, yeah. basically. Yeah. So, this is probably back in August. I got reached out to by like some sort of like search firm for the advertising company that they contract to do these commercials. And they were like, do you want to interview with us and tell us about what you would need? Why you would need a Microsoft Surface, and we're going to make it into a commercial. We think having an NFL reporter would be so cool.
Whoa.
So I Skyped with this casting agency, and they were just like, so describe to me like what happens on game day. And I was like, I'm sitting in my office or at a stadium, and I'm writing stuff down, the plays down on a piece of paper, and I star the important ones. And they're like, so yeah, like, and what would you need a Microsoft Surface for? And I was like, maybe to watch other games. And yeah. They're just like, they're just like, yeah, but you could like draw on it and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I didn't get the part. But
they reach out, and our old friend Andy Benoit uses his Surface for everything. He does all the stuff they say you can do with it. He draws in it all the time.
Oh, that's so funny. Like they were literally looking for Andy, and they accidentally called me instead.
Oh, you could have been in a commercial. That would have been amazing. You would have played on my various screens 72 times every Sunday.
They ended up going with not even an NFL-themed thing, but it's the same one every week. It's like the Salmon Sisters, and they're like, I think they're sisters who all synchronize dive.
Yeah.
So a lot more mass appeal there, I think, than just me sitting in in my house, you know?
Yep. Well, I mean, we just gave Microsoft Surface quite the plug right there. So NFL doesn't need to give them anything more on the field. They can get rid of this entire charade.
Totally. But here's one more point on pass interference that I think is interesting to talk about. It's kind of a little bit of the crux of the essay. Part of it is the NFL, right? It's draconian. It's ridiculous. They have to consider all the advertisers and everything. But what's the other problem? It's us, Gary. We are the second half of the problem. We cannot be pleased. We will never be happy with the NFL. We will never be 100% happy with the NFL.
I think that's totally fair. And I think if the officiating was better, we'd move the bar. We would totally. Complain about the calls that are not as egregiously bad as the ones getting wrong now, and we complain about those.
Because think about the situation. Why did they do it this way? Because it takes less time. And not only do they have to consider all the New Orleans Saints fans who are ready to burn the whole city down when that happened, but there's also a bunch of guys and old people in Chicago and Pittsburgh that say, this takes too long. I hate everything that has to do with instant replay. I don't want this. I don't like this. And so there's those people. There's the people that want it to be more high tech. There's the people that want they want it to be like original Major League Baseball, total human element. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are all part of the problem. And so I think that's why the NFL kind of does these dumb things where reviewable pass interference right now by letter of the law is, hey, let's fix the big mistakes. And then that's something that you can pass like a bill in Congress that's like, let's have clean air. Or, you know, or clean water. And everyone's like, great, but you don't know what that means. And so all these referees are left to decide what a big mistake means and is John Perry told me, which I think is really interesting. If you applied those standards that are written in the rule right now and went back in time to 2018 to the NFC Championship game, he said he probably would not have overturned the Nickell Robey-Coleman pass interference. So it's not even fixing the problem that it was created to fix.
His quote,
place.
And John Perry even had a good tagline there. What was it? It was your definition of a train wreck is not the same as my definitions of a train wreck.
Yeah. Yeah,
he probably exactly. delivers it much better than I just did because he's a more capable broadcaster. But
it's like the Supreme Court case in the 60s. Like, I don't know art, but I know it when I see it. I can't define art, but I know it when I see it. I can't define a train wreck, but I know it when I see it. But the problem is no one can define a train wreck because coaches are only getting these challenges right 9% of the time, which is nuts. It's totally crazy.
Well, if you want to read the article in full, it is on the internet, SI.com, and the title of it. If you want to just Google it, that might also be easier. When it comes to innovating, the NFL is frozen in time. It's a really good read. I very much enjoyed it. You were worried about how it came out, Connor, and I said I enjoyed it thoroughly. I didn't work on this one, so I just enjoyed it as a reader.
Well, I appreciate that. Credit goes to Adam, who edited that with me like a million times. So thank you, Adam, for being very patient with me.
Adam Duerson, he's the best. All right, we got week 12 games to talk about here. We'll be back in a second. All right, we got week 12 games to lightning round here. We'll start with the Sunday nighter, Packers at 49ers. I don't know. I mean, we're looking around the league at all these quarterbacks and all these teams that can't throw the ball anymore and all these offenses that can't move it. Jimmy Garoppolo has looked pretty good when he's had to move the ball the last 2 weeks. Maybe we just kind of overreacted to the whole thing. Maybe just compared to the way the rest of that team was functioning, he's going to be just fine.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's an element of that they didn't need to do some things at the beginning of the season. I mean, they had a soft schedule, and some of those games that they were barely winning at the same time. But if you have like a platoon of running backs like that and you can make them do interesting things and do less risky things with the ball at the beginning of the season while you amass this lead in the division, you know, I think it was a smart thing to do. I think we'll see more of who Jimmy Garoppolo is down the stretch. And we saw that 4-touchdown game, and he's certainly capable of that. But if you don't need to do that, then don't do it. I mean, that's why you got all those running backs.
Yeah, Neil looks good. I don't know. I think he's going to be just fine at this point. I think that team is for real. Cowboys.
Oh, before we move on, do you want to hear my sneaky prediction for this game?
I do.
I made this as my bold prediction on the Week Side podcast, our Wednesday podcast. But I think the Packers are hanging a 40 burger on the 49ers. I think it's just going to be like a totally unforeseen 40 burger.
Rodgers can do it. I don't think there's logic to it, but Rodgers, I mean,
there's zero logic to it.
Yeah.
He hates the 49ers.
That's a good point.
You know, those are just some of those maniacal games that he plays sometimes. I don't know. 40 burger. It's going to happen.
Cowboys at Patriots. Everyone's worried about the Patriots offense. I wonder if we're not worried enough at this point. I thought a sort of red flag for them. They ran out a couple of gadget plays in Philadelphia, and they tend to go to those. In the past, they have gone to those in those weeks where it's like, oh, Gronk is injured, and also, you know, whatever, Edelman's suspended or whatever it would be, and they're just sort of desperately scraping it together. I mean, they ran two of them. They ran a throwback to Brady, and then obviously the Edelman touchdown pass there. I don't know. I don't know if they have a plan here.
My initial thought on that was, because you have Edelman and Sanu who can both throw, is that, like, are you for some reason trying to put this on film now so that when you throw these short passes that you're trying to get everybody to commit, or you're trying to get everybody to give them more space, or is there another reason why you're like rolling these out now, like just when you've acquired Sanu and when you have some wiggle room in the division? I don't know. I mean, with Belichick, you always just have to wonder if he's thinking 9 or 10 moves ahead. But yeah, I mean, you know, this offense does look middling, right? And yeah. I think that that's what you would expect from having a 42-year-old quarterback, but it's just sort of, it's average. But this defense has been spectacular this year, and so here we are.
Broncos at Bills. This is my sort of favorite secret excellent coaching matchup here. Rich Scangarello versus Sean McDermott. Everyone's on the Broncos for blowing that game in Minnesota, and no one's really realizing, like, they just went there with Brandon Allen and, you know, basically a bunch of second and third stringers, and they almost beat the Vikings in Minnesota.
Yeah, and there were like 10 excellent pressure play calls from Rich Scangarello there in that game. I think this is what he does. When he was in San Francisco, he was blowing teams out with Nick Mullins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he can adapt on the fly to undrafted quarterback level talent and get them ready to play. I mean, they're playing better than they have with Joe Flacco this year. We're finally starting to see Noah Fant get involved. His targets have skyrocketed. This is good. I mean, this is all very exciting. And I actually picked them to beat the Bills, not because I don't like Sean McDermott's defense, but because I think this is one of those games that they could come in and steal if they play well enough.
This is a danger game for the Bills because the Bills have had weeks where they really struggled to stop the run. And obviously this is you got Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman coming at you here. Scangarello is my sort of dark horse head coaching candidate here. I think
I like
you're
that.
Looking around the league for everyone's going to want their Kyle Shanahan. I think Kyle Shanahan is going to be sort of the Sean McVay of this year, who's touched Kyle Shanahan, and I think Scangarello is going to get some attention here.
Because he has touched Kyle Shanahan.
He has. Giants at Bears. Look, Trubisky's best game in the past, like, calendar year was against the Lions, and the Lions have no pass rush, and they're sort of disjointed in the secondary right now. Very similar to what the Giants are defensively. Is Trubisky, I mean, if his hip's okay, and we're all praying for his hip here, but is Trubisky going to have a similar, I don't want to call it a breakout game, but a similar sort of, oh, this is an average starting quarterback game against this pass rush challenge Giants defense?
I don't know, man. Jenny Vrentis, our senior writer, made this comparison first, but we both had a firsthand look at the demise of Mark Sanchez, and this looks so familiar from every standpoint. And you saw a broken person on the sidelines on Sunday, and a guy that, you know, could tell this wasn't 100% about the hip injury, even though I do think he got hit there and it probably was affecting him a little bit. I mean, this guy is rattled to his core, I think, and it's going to take some pretty special coaching to get him out of this, and probably not from the guy who's tortured 12 kickers half to death over the last 6 months. You know, I don't know if he's got the emotional finesse to get this done.
This is going sour quick. That's going to be for Bears fans a disappointingly interesting matchup there against mm-hmm. the Giants team that beat them last year, by the way, with Chase Daniel.
Yeah.
Steelers at Bengals. Mason Rudolph, I mean, look, everyone was talking about the Myles Garrett stuff rightfully after the Thursday night game. Mason Rudolph was really, 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 really bad in that game. I mean, I think he's been sort of secretly bad in the run-up to this. He's had some moments once every five throws or so, but I wonder if the Bengals might have a chance to steal one here.
I think they might. We finally saw Joe Mixon getting into it a little bit last week. Maybe it takes Zach Taylor, you know, just 10 games to kind of feel it out. There's a man in Cincinnati who said that he would not stop living on the roof of a bar until the Bengals won a game this season. So he has not spent a night with his wife in over 50 days. He's living on top of a bar in Cincinnati with space heaters. He said he's very cold. And so here's hoping he gets to come down.
That's so dumb.
I read the story, by the way, and it just really seems like he doesn't want to spend time with his family.
He really does.
Because they're like, why are you doing this? And he's like, well, you know, everyone at the bar is going to be mad at me if I come down. And it's like, no, they're not. You could just come down. You know, it's fine.
Oh, boy. Those are some good friends there. Dolphins at Browns. I don't know. Browns against a team with no secondary here. We've kind of been waiting for Wentz's Baker, Beckham, Landry thing really going to take off. I do wonder about, they're like three plays a game where it's like, wow, that's a quarterback and receiver that are just out of sync. Just Baker gets a route from Beckham that Beckham runs it away that you don't expect him to run it. But I do wonder if there's so much leeway, so much margin for error against his Dolphins banged up secondary, not very good secondary to begin with at home, that they can sort of do some nice things, the things we've been waiting for all year this week.
They can run all their route concepts that they've been trying to run all season but haven't had the time to. You know, Odell Beckham can get a double move off, and Baker Mayfield can extend a play with some relative comfort. So I think this is going to be a huge game for Beckham and sneaky huge game for Kareem Hunt. I think this might be the Kareem Hunt game, too.
Yeah. Bucks at Falcons. Just a point-blank question. More likely to have his current job this time next season, Dan Quinn or Jameis Winston?
Dan Quinn, and I think he cements that this weekend. I think for sure. It's been incredible to see. First, when the team came out and said that they took the blame on themselves, and then yeah. They start rattling off a few big wins, start like throttling some good teams. I think if they take care of the Buccaneers, he locks in his 2020 gig.
What a turnaround! They're going to finish 7-9, and it's going to be like an all time turnaround.
Yeah, it's great.
Panthers at Saints. Kyle Allen is just sort of melting before our eyes here. And I just kind of wonder, Saints, even if they have no Marshawn Lattimore, can you take advantage of that, one? And the second thing is, if you're going to be one-dimensional, if this is going to be all McCaffrey from here on out, especially this week, can you beat the Saints on the road this way?
No chance. You can't beat the Saints without a quality starter under center. But that said, I would love to see, you have guys like Curtis Samuel, you have Christian McCaffrey. I mean, let's get creative. When Sean Payton was without Drew Brees for a couple weeks, we saw some really unique stuff in the backfield to sort of window dress defenses into making some stupid mistakes. Let's see a little bit of that from Carolina and just stay in the game for three quarters.
Lions go to Washington. I am not a fan of let's see what we have in the quarterback, especially when it's your guy who is clearly your you know, franchise quarterback of the future, which is what Washington has in Dwayne Haskins. So I guess I'm leading with this question a little bit, but is this late season run helping or hurting Haskins in the long run?
I think it's bad. It's a horrible situation, and we saw this in the preseason. Out of every rookie quarterback that was coming out this year, he looked the least ready, and it was evident from day one, and I don't know what changed over the last 10 weeks, two of which you spent firing your coach and basically installing a new Adrian Peterson offense.
Trap game for Gruden's Raiders here. Coming across the country before this Chiefs matchup, going Raiders at Jets here. This is, I don't know. This is really interesting. These are two teams that are pretty crappy. That have, I mean, look, the Raiders are playoff contenders, and the Jets have strung together a couple of wins here.
If the Raiders win this game, they're an almost 60% chance of making the playoffs per 538. So think about that. John Gruden is back.
Unreal. Seahawks and Eagles flex out of the Sunday night game, kicked out of the Sunday night game. So we go early 1 o'clock game here for the Seahawks. Seahawks haven't stopped any opposing passing offenses this year, but does it really matter when the Eagles are trotting out what is, I mean, I think it has to be the slowest receiving core in NFL history at this point.
Yeah, and it's stunting Carson Wentz a little bit too, which I think is unfortunate. We've seen sort of some weird and uncharacteristic plays from him, and that's not the steady sort of ascension that we expected out of him this year. So, you know, you could tell that there's a reason why they were so active on the market to begin with, and who knows? I mean, maybe they're one of the teams that's doing their homework on an Antonio Brown type for the remainder of the season.
Jaguars at Titans. It's funny, Jaguars took Derrick Henry out of the game the first time they played this year and broke a four-game losing streak against the Titans. Mariota couldn't make him pay. I'm still not on the Tannehill bandwagon, but I wonder if he makes them pay a little bit more than Mariota did in that Thursday night matchup.
I think that's fair to say there's probably three or four plays a game that he can make with his arm that Mariota can't make with his arm, and it does that make the difference? And, you know, it's going to be interesting, too. I mean, this is still the beginning of the season for Nick Foles, too, so I'm interested to see in what direction they're going offensively, too.
And the Monday Nighter, Ravens at Rams. We've talked a ton about Lamar on all these shows on the podcast, so we'll set Lamar aside for a moment here and just... this Rams offense, have they found an answer with Chris Collinsworth's favorite offensive lineman ever and Todd Gurley sort of hammering it inside right now? Because it was, I will say, their last touchdown drive when they started hitting some play action stuff was encouraging. It looked like, obviously it wasn't sustained, but it looked like flashes of what you saw from the Rams a year ago.
Yeah, it's crazy how much that offense changed without the idea of like a consistently healthy Todd Gurley. But you wonder if this was part of the plan, if it's like that arthritic condition. Do you save him a little bit for the stretch run of the season and then start showing teams a little bit of what you did last year? But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, that knee, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with it?
All right. That's the whole slate. That's a wrap. Listen, I know a lot of you will want to talk about Teen Angel on social media right now. Do tell me if you remember it, if you recognize it. But I don't want anyone to give me any more details on it. I want it to live in my head forever as it does right now.
Yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page right now. You know who was in it? Maureen McCormick, classic sort of sitcom actress. And there was also like a, this is not the time to be doing your research on Teen Angel, but I liked it a lot. It ran from September, late September 97 to early February 98. So okay, all the Teen Angel stands out there, get at me. And maybe I'll check the Teen Angel Reddit and see what's going on.
I was going to say, that's half a season run. It's enough to be memorable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was good. You know, they were the Kyle Allen of sitcoms, right? To put a bow on it, right?
Yes. There you go. Oh. The MMQB NFL Thursday show is me, Gary Gramling. Thanks to Connor Orr for joining us this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is an emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.